I'm Jay Bradley Minnick from Arts and Letters Radio, and today we're presenting a special episode, Ar Poetica, a program created by our senior producer, Mary Ellen Cubitt, and hosted by both of us. It's about Arkansas poets and their work. We hope you enjoy the show.
From the studios of KUAR in Little Rock, Arkansas, I'm Mary Ellen Cubitt.
And I'm Jay Bradley Minnick.
And this is Ar Poetica, a program where Arkansas poets discuss their work, their writing, and the connections it has with their lives. In today's episode, we feature Arkansas poet Kai Coggin. She's the inaugural poet laureate of Hot Springs and the author of Mining for Stardust and several other poetry collections, including Mother of Other Kingdoms. Coggin has won many awards for her work. A K-12 Teaching Artist in Poetry with the Arkansas Arts Council,
a Catalyze Grant Fellow with the Mid-America Arts Alliance,
and she hosts the longest consecutive weekly open mic series in the country,
Wednesday Night Poetry.
And if that's not enough, 10 of Kai's poems are going to the moon with the Lunar Codex Project.
I'm not a religious person, but I believe in spirit, and I believe that we're all sort of coming from a higher place, and we drop down to earth or to this life to learn and to go through lessons and to go through things so that you can overcome them and then turn around and help other people. Growing up gay in the Catholic Church, you know, that was a really big thing to overcome for me. But then I became a high school English teacher and I started the first gay-straight alliance for the kids. And I always tell kids that poetry is a safe place for your feelings.
Join us as we hear Kai's poetry and chat about speaking up and speaking out against injustice.
The joy of being married to her wife, Joanne.
The love of her food dogs.
And being saved by the natural world. Let's talk about poetry with Kai Coggin.
Why don't we start with Mining for Stardust, which is a kind of meditation on the pandemic and your relation to it, as well as America and the world, space, stardust.
Maybe the goddesses on Jupiter and Saturn are looking here in this grand conjunction, looking at us in wild wonder, looking for signs of light, flickers of hope, streaks of greatness, a return, a calling to home. Maybe we are all mining for stardust, sifting flakes of space for gold amidst the dark matter surrounding us on all sides. I shine the brightest flashlight I have, my heart, into the night sky, shout, I am the Milky Way to anyone that will hear me. I am cosmos, cosmic beauty, something of the firelight shooting into the sky, smoke rising from my mouth, fire glinting in my teeth. I look for a sign, and I am the sign. The planets are lining up so close on this solstice night, they look like one Bethlehemic miracle of a star. And I curl up so close to you, in the warm tent you have made for us, fireside. Fluffed with piles of soft blankets and pillows, our dogs snoring under starlight. The night is rife with poems. Our nights always ripening into beauty, and maybe we are a conjunction's reflection, grand in our blue closeness, merging to naked eyes on the horizon as one. The concept of Mining for Stardust, it was a time of such darkness for us, for humanity. And during this time that this poem came to be, there was this grand conjunction in the sky, and it was during Christmas, and these planets were aligning in such a way that it looked like the Star of Bethlehem in the sky. It was so bright. And so it kind of puts you in this position of thinking back to the stories of, you know, Christ being born and, you know, this holiness. And it could have just been the planets that were aligning in such a way. And so it sort of shifts the paradigm. But mining for stardust, despite all the dark, still finding those little glimmers of hope.
this about the author poem is quite serious. It has a serious tone in terms of your purpose and your passion, but if I can bring in a little fun moment here, this is also a play on the about the author section, typically at the back of poetry books. Mm-hmm. They would typically be much more informative, more of a bio.
Yeah.
So talk about that little play you're doing here and kind of transforming that typical author statement at the back of a book.
With an artist statement or an author statement, yeah, it is usually a bio, where you went to school and, you know, the shiny things, your highlights and what you've accomplished.
Mm-hmm.
But those places don't really give a lot of room for what your purpose is. And for me, over the course of these last four books that I've had published, my purpose has really been sort of sharpening who I am and why I'm writing these poems. I might be writing about a bird or a fox or something, but usually those smaller microcosmic things, those elements of the natural world, will reflect something greater, some sort of cosmic truth or something that I want to say in a way that I might not have the words for. So this page of the book is really me sort of claiming that space. And if I were, you know, given the space to name my purpose, that's what my highest hopes of that would be. This is about the author. About her. Beacon persistent. Manifester of previously uncrossed stars. Puller down of such cosmos. Voice of the voiceless. Undaunted historian of human striving, protest sign in poems held up against systems, breaker of systems. The poet is the breaker of systems. The poet is the builder of new systems, worlds perhaps. She is from those worlds, here, in fact, on sabbatical from stint as stardust, walking in human feet, for a cycle of orbits that has no language here. Life on Earth is a practice in darkness, overcoming. The poet speaks the language of overcoming. She is, too, wife of master naturalist, so de facto master naturalist, leaf inspector, bloom herald, bird singer onto page. Holder of light against all things seemingly heretofore opaque. I laughed at the end because I'm now a master naturalist, not a de facto one, you know. I went and studied and got certified, and so my wife and I are both master naturalists. So even that has really shifted who I am and how I write and the lens through which I observe the world. I was born in Bangkok and raised in Houston in a concrete jungle. And before moving to Arkansas, I was scared of the dark. I was scared to walk in the woods at night to take my trash can to the road, you know. And I was very, very afraid of the wild, just because of the unknown of it all. And now it's the total opposite. I can't stand the city. I don't like the vibrations of, you know, downtowns and just all
When did that happen?
After moving here and being here for a few years, but during the pandemic, and being isolated and not being able to go out into the world anymore, I really zoomed in on the natural world around me. We have 17 acres and can walk around our woods and swim in our waters and grow things and plant things from seed and just watch the whole process. And so that's where I went when I was grieving this greater grief. I would go into the garden and I would watch something grow. Not enough words for light. We walk across the meadow to sit on the hood of the car, a drive-in movie of movement and flight. We face the wall of trees that hugs us from all sides, and we chase the shooting flames of bioluminescent beings seeing each other, calling out with the sex of their colors, blinking their lust like a song into the breaking open night. Oh, to make light out of our bodies like this, just by breathing, chemicals reacting like this, like us, and how the light show becomes a blur because above the tree line, spread across the dome of night, are millions of flickering stars. All shimmer and shine, speaking the same language as the fireflies, illumination rippling up and out in cosmic waves, a slow dance into the infinite from grass to trees to glinting sky, and there are not enough words for light to embody this moment. Not enough synonyms for shine to describe something this divine. And yes, we sat in wonder. And maybe we slow danced, and maybe we kissed, and poets wait their whole lives for love scenes like this. And even in this earnest retelling, remembering sleep underneath all of those stars, rolling over into your arms and waking up covered in dew, my smile is the Milky Way you can see from here, and it shines, darling, it shines for you.
The idea of the sky and stars and night seems to be a theme that you've kept.
It is.
I mean, we've talked about change a little too on the phone, and it seems central.
Yeah, absolutely. And the cover of Mining for Stardust is the Pillars of Creation in the Eagle Nebula. And I had to get permission from NASA to use that image. And so the stars, they're a constant source of light, and they're dead, but their light is reaching us.
Tell us just a little bit about voicing the voiceless, being an undaunted historian and a protester.
I feel a tremendous responsibility as a woman who lives my life on the margins, as a queer woman, as a brown woman, a woman of color, an Asian American woman, all of the different identities that intersect with who I am. I have a tremendous responsibility, I feel, that having a platform, I need to use my voice.
Would you mind reading This America, How Much More Can We Take?
This America, its spacious skies choked with the ash of a million acres burning. Climate change deniers keep the fires raging higher. Everything tinder, everything silver cinders and smoke. Black out the sun with the arms of falling redwoods. Ancients collapsing with the weight of humanity's collective disregard. How much more can we take? This America, its purple mountain majesty turned bloody bruises, turned tear gas and rubber bullet blush, turned crush under the foot of brutality's boot, knee on his pleading throat, George. Shot 7 times in the back in front of his children, Jacob. These men, these black men, these black fathers whose martyrdom is unfounded, unfound fathers lost to their existences, holes in their former lives, to teach us a lesson that keeps repeating and repeating that you cannot be black in this America and survive. You cannot be sleeping like Breonna Taylor and stay alive. Hashtags stitched up to the stars like barbed wire, and we have fenced ourselves in with all our collective history and hate to look at each other in the face until each side screams we're a civil war, and this America, I just can't take it anymore. Sometimes I'll write a political poem for myself. I'll write it as an act of my own healing, my own claiming of space. I don't necessarily have to explain my political poems. And yeah, they can be downers, but they can also be calls to action, calls to awareness. And so I don't really ever explain my political poems because you can just look around and see these things unfolding in real time. This is a book that really revisits a traumatic time in not just our personal consciousness, but in our collective consciousness. And we really went through quite a harrowing experience. And some of us are still suffering the repercussions of those many experiences that we went through together that I chronicled in this book. I wanted to invite the reader in to give them a space to sort of go through their own feelings. And that's a teacher in me that's doing that. When I visit the classrooms in Arkansas, whether it's a third grader or a 12th grader, I tell them the same thing. Poetry is a safe place for your feelings. And whether they forget anything that I teach them about who we're reading or what we're reading, if they remember that one line, poetry is the safe place for your feelings, I will have left them and done my job. So that is why I wanted to give a space to my reader at the end of this book, just to process. What did you go through during the pandemic? Did you lose someone? Are you remembering someone when you read these poems? Tell me about it. A poem you write, dear reader. Take this space for yourself. Grab a pen. Mind the stardust that remains etched in yourselves after what we all experienced together. Write. Reflect. Put your feelings down onto the page. How did you break? How did you grow? What do you take with you into tomorrow? Take this space for yourself. Grab a pen.
You're listening to Ars Poetica. Let's return to our conversation with Kai Coggin.
Honestly, I live a really beautiful life. I'm really lucky to have someone that loves me, to have a home and food. And, you know, I feel really privileged for the position that I'm in and where we live and how we live. And even being here in Arkansas, just all of the nature that's around us and living in a national park. Coming from Houston, we couldn't even walk our dogs without having to give them a bath afterwards. It was just so grimy, and the energy of the city was so bad, and the housing market was crashing, and we were just wanting to get out of the city. And we got a vacation rental in Mount Ida, Arkansas. It was owned by this self-proclaimed shaman, and he had long white dreads, and he basically wore a loincloth, really thin, like weird shorts. And he had his own wolf pack. Okay, he had three wolves, and he was the alpha wolf, and he would put his wolves in his minivan, and he would drive them up to the mountaintop, and then he would let them run around on the mountain and hunt game and wild rabbits, and then he would load them back up into his minivan and drive them back to the vacation rental. And so he's there with me and Joanne and our two little frou-frou dogs. He's on the property with his wolves. So we're sitting in the stream. He was telling us about the geology of Arkansas and the Madras Fault and these and that. And then you hear this death scream, animal death scream. And you know that that animal is about to die. And we looked around and one of our dogs was gone. And the wolves had fluffy dog Layla, a little Pekingese Layla, in their mouths. And they were just about to rip her in two. And we heard the yelp and ran as fast as we could. And Joanne yelled, "No!" And the vibration of her no made the wolves just unclench and drop Layla to the ground. And they backed up. She ripped up the chain link fence, Joanne, crawled underneath it, and went and grabbed Layla. And we ran into the shower, and blood was just running down Joanne's leg or her body. And she was holding Layla. And Layla was kind of coming back to herself. And we got the, she had fur underneath her eyelids and puncture holes and stuff. And she was just, we were all in just shock. Oh my God, she was almost eaten by wolves at our vacation rental. And so we drove from Mount Ida. The closest place to drive to was Hot Springs. And we landed in Hot Springs and we went to the Walgreens and got some ointment and some children's aspirin and stuff and didn't even think to bring her to the vet, but that's how we got to Hot Springs. The dog's okay, yeah. Yeah. They're foo dogs, you know, the dogs that you have in the front of the, like they have them in front of Chinese restaurants, but they were in front of temples, like in ancient China, and the emperors would wear them in their sleeves, in the sleeves of their robes. They were called sleeve Pekingese, and the dogs would come out and smell the emperor's food and make sure it wasn't being poisoned, and it just would go back and sleep in the robe of the emperors, if you can believe that. Huh. So we get our little Pekingese, Genghis, first, and we thought he was going to be a sleeve Pekingese, and he ended up getting all big and, you know, about 15 pounds. So. temple dogs. For Genghis and Layla, foo dogs. If my heart is the temple, let them always stand as guardians, small lions, foo fierce fur balls that stand parallel pi squared, chest out proud little boxes, earth and mankind under their paws, coming from the star trails of comets or Sirius the dog star or the tip of the Great Bear's nose or just some sweeter dimension than here. I recognize the ancient blessing they are, little Pekingese, little peeking eyes in the consciousness of my lifetimes. They walk the lifelines back to me on the leash of goodness and love. I have renamed the chambers of my heart, Genghis and Layla, yin and yang, him and her, both equal in strength and softness, in ferocity and fur. There is a magic carpet that takes me in my dreams, and they are the flight and levitation, the elevation that ensues the moment we snooze, the wonder snoring beside me. Their little tufts of breath make a song that unshackles the earthly body and opens up the spirit to swirl around the cosmos. Yes, these little dogs do that. These little waking forces of beauty and protection, these four-legged masters. The emperors of ancient Peking, the Forbidden City, carried pocket-sized Pekingese in the hammocks of their crimson silk robe sleeves. They would inspect emperors' cuisine and bark of poisons. They would snap at the ankles of those who breached the walls. They would guide the leaders of dynasties to use their intuition and hearts. Sleeve Pekingese. Oh, please never leave Pekingese. Tiny emissaries on a mission of protection, and I am no Forbidden City Empress. But these small lions, one black, one white, these two giants, these fuzzy angels, these small soft ninjas are the eyes in the sky, my warrior guardians of the soul. In the mornings, they are warm bundles contoured around my contours, shaping what love feels like. Genghis and Layla, Heart Temple Foo Dogs, I found out when writing this poem, foo means poetry in Chinese. See what I mean about the gifts they bring? My spirit animals, my animal spirits, two sides of the coin that I am, the sweet and the fierce, the licks of love and punctures of bite, the black and the white, they mingle and mix and reflect all. Divine little mirrors, my tufted wings, flying me higher and higher to the temple within myself. So my wife painted the covers for my first three books. She's a visual artist, and I'm in my office and I hear her painting sometimes, and that's how this poem was born. As you paint and I write. I listen to you sing Joni Mitchell in your studio while you paint. Hear the swish and splash of your paintbrush, dip swirling and clinking in the glass. The colors fading together in my mind, hues blending into a moving sea. And your sweet voice, your charmingly imperfect pitch and tender hum, the clink of the brush chime into the lines of this poem. You don't even know I am listening so intently, that your brush strokes are painting warmth onto my face, a smile on my lips. I could drink a case of you, darling. I hum along as I write. My chest fills with cerulean. Your playlist of love songs croons softly into my office, makes it hard for me to focus on work because my heart keeps getting pulled into the songs and the space between us. I rise in the chorus of one of our favorite lines, turn and see you already silhouetted in my doorway, your face gently tipped to touch the doorframe. Singing, we walk slowly to each other, embrace in the endless songs that hold us, the tenderness that sustains us. We slow dance in the hallway, all our colors fading together, a moving sea.
Would you read one last poem for us?
When the world is a flood, we have an Arkansas. Maybe we are all drowning somehow, and this is the ark that saves us, this bowl of soul and green and wood and water. We board this landlocked vessel in our most natural state, two by two, our two eyes, our two ears, our two hands, our two feet, up the ramp of coupled hope and fear onto this barge of escaping chaos for calm. The world is a whirling, wanton flood, and we are somehow safe here, slowed down, awestruck by some rare beauty rising like bright corks that bob on waves of boundless trees. Look how you can still see the stars from here, how they shoot nebulas to the backs of your eyes. Your mind unfolds a new universe. The white noise is green here. Everything hum, hum, buzz with new life. You can hear the opening of buds and flowers turning their cheeks towards sky. We are filled to our volcanic brims with 4,000-year-old water from hot springs, and this, too, makes us float beyond gravity. See the boat we have built in the ethers. I can stand on this little plot of land and feel like I own the whole world. And if I did, I would give it away freely just to say, look, there are still places that quiet the moonrise over mountains. There are crystals underfoot vibrating their frequencies through your souls. There are still streams that cut their own wild rush over stones. Fox and frog and bluebird sing a harmony all their own. And I won't forget what I was escaping when I came here. But when I got here, I knew that I was home. Maybe we are all drowning somehow, and this is the ark that saves us, this bowl of soul and green and wood and water.
Broadcast from the studios of KUAR in Little Rock, you've been listening to Ars Poetica, presented by Arts and Letters Radio. Thanks for joining us. To check out the episode information, visit artsandlettersradio.org.
A big thank you to Silas Height for producing, editing, composing the music, and mixing and mastering the episode. Generous funding for Ars Poetica was provided by UA Little Rock's Summer Research and Creative Activities Fellowship, from the College of Humanities, Arts, Social Sciences, and Education. An extra special thank you to poet Kai Coggan for sharing her piece, her perspectives, and her poetry.
For Ars Poetica, we're Mary Ellen Cubitt
and J. Bradley Minnick. And don't forget to support local poets in your community.
Poetry books change lives. Ars Poetica is a production of LTD Media, Inc.